Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, February the 11th. It's a rainy, cold rain kind of day here in the Dallas area, 43, 44 degrees. It's going to get a little warmer, I guess, the rest of the week. But right now, it's a chilly day. It's one of those chilly days that we get here in winter. I'm sure you folks up in the Midwest are probably laughing at me when I say this, but this is chilly for us, and we are sort of reacting to it, I guess, the way we always do when it's cold outside. You know, we overdress and so on. So a chilly day in North Texas, that's all I can say. Well, they're going to be voting in New Hampshire throughout the day. I think it probably closed at 7 p.m., so we'll get some results tonight. From what I understand, there's heavy voting, so, you know, that's a good thing. And we should have some results later tonight, and we'll talk about it on the Wednesday podcast. We'll talk about the election. You know, a lot of people are predicting a lot of things, and I would simply caution everybody that if you have a heavy turnout like they're talking about, and there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of voters who are waiting until the last minute, as they say, to decide, well, when you have that kind of a landscape, I would simply caution people to jump to a lot of conclusions. There could be some surprises tonight, as they like to say. I want to begin by directing you to a post over at the American Thinker that I posted this Tuesday morning, and it's about moderates and the Democrat Party. The fact that the Washington Post had an editorial talking about this, where they're basically saying, look, there are no moderates in this group. I mean, this is a group that if you look at their policies, if you look at their proposals, this is a group that is to the left of President Obama on many things, And that's the truth. And that's why the biggest need that the Democrats have is actually the need for a moderate, but they don't have one. They don't have one because of the way their primary system is set up and the things that you have to say to win their primary or to win their nomination, you have to go so far to the left that you're simply unelectable. Now, it used to be in American politics that in the primaries, you know, the candidates went to the left, the candidates went to the right a little bit, and then they sort of came back to the middle. I don't know how you come back to the middle, some of the things that these candidates are saying. And it's not just economic policy, universal health care, and all that kind of stuff, which is completely, I mean, it's just never going to happen. But we're talking about things like abortion and things about, you know, issues of transgender and all these kinds of things. I just don't think the country is where they are. I think the country is far, far to the right of these ideas, and this is what consumes them. They're just always talking about Trump. They're always talking about transgenders. They're always talking about abortion. They're always talking about all these things. I don't think the country's there. You know, and many of them, they probably know this. I think many of these candidates, they know it. But they're so committed, they have to go so far to the left that they have pretty much, I guess, they've accepted the road they're in. And I think what many of these candidates are hoping for is that somehow Trump fumbles or there's a big economic crash, something like in 2008. Remember in 2008 when in October you had this big crash? And I think that crash obviously contributed, in my opinion, to the loss of John McCain. I really do. Because if you look at the polling data back in the first week of October 2008 or the last week of September 2008, you know, President or Senator John McCain back then was actually very much in a dead heat with President or then Senator Obama. And then it kind of faded in October as that banking crisis hit. And, you know, I don't think Senator McCain handled it well, but that's okay. That's another topic. But the bottom line is that I think a lot of Democrats are betting on something like that happening or some big fumble by President Trump that somehow gets him in. But if that doesn't happen, and I don't think it is going to happen, then, you know, I think a lot of these Democrats are just coming to terms with the reality that they're not going to defeat President Trump. And that's why I think you're seeing, speaking of New Hampshire again, I think you're seeing a lot of dissatisfaction with the candidates. This is why, according to some of the reports, that there were so many people undecided. I mean, you have, I've seen reports that 20 or 25% of the electorate is undecided. They don't know who they're going to vote for. They're not satisfied with any of the candidates. They're like, who do we vote for? Who can defeat Trump? Now, the conventional wisdom in New Hampshire, is that Sanders is going to win. And he probably will. If I had to bet you a cup of coffee right now, that's probably who he will win. The big question is what's going to happen to number two and number three? Who's going to be number two and number three? And how close is number two going to be to number one? All these expectations games that they like to play. And I think there is a legitimate question, too, as to what happens to former Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Elizabeth Warren. I think those two, if they have a bad day, I mean, those two could be out, especially Senator Warren. I mean, I don't know how much further she can go. I mean, if she cannot do well in New Hampshire, which is a state right next to Massachusetts, where they get a lot of, Boston media, so they hear a lot about Elizabeth Warren, if she cannot do well in New Hampshire, I think she's out. I really do. I mean, I think she'll be the first one to drop out. Vice President Biden will probably hang around to South Carolina. I think that's her expectation, and maybe they've got the money to hang around, but it costs a lot of money to keep these campaigns going. And what happens to these candidates and these campaigns is that once people figure out that you're not going to win, once people look at the landscape and they say, oh, no, he's not going to win, then the money stops. And that's as simple as that. The money stops. The money absolutely stops. And unless you have $2 billion like Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, to sit there and basically finance your campaign without a single campaign contribution, unless you can do that, it's pretty tough to hang around for any length of time. So we'll see what happens. We'll discuss it tomorrow, but I will caution everybody, don't jump for the conventional wisdom here. New Hampshire can surprise you, and you never know. That undecided vote can go in any direction it wants. And if you're undecided at this point, who knows how you're going to vote? I think a lot of people are just going to do impulse. They're just going to go in and say, okay, I'll vote for Bernie, or I'll vote for Amy Klobuchar, or whatever. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But uncertainty is the name of the game. Is the name of the game in New Hampshire, and who that benefits, I don't know. But it clearly makes the conventional wisdom or the predictions a little bit risky at this time of the game. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're talking a little New Hampshire. And, one of the things about New Hampshire that it's interesting to follow, New Hampshire being the first primary has often had an impact on our politics in a sense of shaking up the conventional wisdom. Back in 1952, when then President Truman was thinking about running for re-election, now he was extremely unpopular. At this time in 1952, and most people didn't think he would win, but he could run for re-election because even though he had been president for 8 years, the first four of those 8 years, that's when he replaced President Roosevelt after he passed away in April. So he, in a sense, he had only had one term of his own. And there was some talk that he would run for re-election, but he decided not to, and New Hampshire was a big reason that he didn't. In 1968, President Johnson was completely shaken up in New Hampshire by Senator Gene McCarthy, who was the anti-war candidate that year. So New Hampshire has a way of surprising people. In 2000, Senator McCain really shook up the campaign of then Governor George W. Bush. And that, you know, made at the time, you know, Bush had to go down to South Carolina and win there, which he did. He did in South Carolina. So New Hampshire does have an impact. So tonight, you know, we could have something like that. We could have something that happens tonight in New Hampshire that shakes things up. Again, we'll know. We'll know in a few hours. But we will see. We will see what happens. I have a post coming out on Wednesday, changing from politics to history here a little bit. I have a post coming out on Wednesday morning about the 30th anniversary of the release of Nelson Mandela. It was 30 years ago this week that Nelson Mandela was released from prison in South Africa. He had been, you know, a political prisoner for 27 years, and he was released. He was released, and, you know, obviously he was an international figure, and there was a lot of expectations, a lot of good vibrations, if you will, about his release, but it didn't really turn out that good for the country. When you look at the situation in South Africa today, and you look at a country that is really, really undergoing some dramatic problems, they were never able to reconcile their racial differences, and in fact, many of the white South Africans had their lands expropriated, and there were all kinds of problems in South Africa, and the country is really, really never lived up to the expectations, I think, that people had when Mandela was released. So 30 years after Mandela, I think you would have to agree that maybe the expectations of a more just and peaceful South Africa really never panned out. And I would argue South Africa is worse off today than it was before. I'm not saying apartheid was right. Of course it wasn't. But the way that the new left-wing governments of South Africa have tried to address the problems, I think, has done more harm than good. And unfortunately, Nelson Mandela never did enough to stop it. I mean, I know he passed away a few years ago, but he could have done more, I think, to set the tone for a reconciliation, and it never actually happened. So check out my Mandela post tomorrow about this. It was on this day in 1942, really this week in 1942, that the big battle of Midway happened in the Pacific. This was a huge naval battle and a huge victory for the United States, and it probably gave the United States at least the optimism that they, you know, that we could actually fight this war in the Pacific. And I have a post about this. If you look at my blog, and also if you follow me on Facebook, I have a post about that battle. It was a chat that we had with Barry Jacobson a couple of years ago about the Battle of Midway, and that was a turning point in many ways. I mean, that was a very complicated war, and there wasn't one individual thing, but that was a major one. That was a major point in the timeline of World War II, especially in the Pacific. So check out my chat with Barry Jacobson, military historian. We did that a few years ago, and I reposted it today on my blog, as well as on Twitter, as well as Facebook, if you follow me in one of those three. And finally, on this day in 1861, President-elect Lincoln left Springfield for Washington, D.C. He took the train for Washington, D.C. for his inauguration. Of course, back then, we inaugurated presidents on the 4th of March. So that's why, you know, he waited until that time. And that was a very historic trip that he took. And that was also a very unsafe trip that he took, because there were many, 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 many threats to his life along the way. And they finally had to literally sneak him out of the train. They took him to Baltimore first, and then from Baltimore to Washington, D.C., all of that to protect him, because there were all kinds of threats to his life. So Abraham Lincoln, president-elect, took the train to Washington, and I have a post about that as well in my blog. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.